And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 708. Going to continue our early season NFBC DC ADP debates, heading to second base tonight. Talk some recent news and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDendrick and my co-host, as always, once a week at least, usually in the first half of the week, but holidays have dictated things this week. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Bented, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. I hope happy belated Christmas to you, or merry belated Christmas to you, that is. And yeah, it was a nice couple of days off, or well, I have this week off from work, so today was nice, just working on my rankings and stuff like that. But yeah, it's good to, and also I'll mention I am signing up for a draft right now at DC that's waiting to fill. That. So
Yeah, so
I'm ready to get going now finally. And the debates are definitely helpful. I know other the listeners like it too, but definitely for me. I mean, with catcher, we did it. I was pretty. You tested some of my stances on certain players, and I even made an adjustment today after some things. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the show. And second base is, I think it's kind of polarizing. People say it's bad. Some say it's not bad. So I guess we'll see what happens as we go through it.
Yeah, it will be fun. Like, I think it's bad, but it's more bad because the top's bad, and then it's just like a big pot in the middle. But I guess it depends on how you want to attack. The more I've talked and looked into second base, I've like started to like different players later in the draft. I'm trying to convince myself waiting and getting one of these guys might be better. Who knows if that's the answer. So yeah, we'll talk about all of that, of course. And again, and a happy late, or a merry late Christmas to you as well.
The same thing.
Yeah, merry late Christmas to you as well. And yeah, hope the listeners had a good one out there for doing whatever they were doing, whatever they're celebrating, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever. Hope you guys are having a great time. I was like telling the Discord, had everybody over for Christmas at my house. I have four Jewish members of the family. They lit the menorah last night. So the whole thing took place at the house, and everyone was happy celebrating whatever they want to celebrate, having a good time. So
worked out nice this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It all lined up. All right. Let's start things off with some news. And there was quite a bit of news since we've last talked, Ben. They all got together and said, let's make a lot of money before the holidays. And that's what they did. Good for them. I enjoy the earlier signings than the late signings. So more power to them. They want to pick things up here before the New Year's. Good with that as well. But we'll start with a flurry of first basemen. Christian Walker signs with the Houston Astros. To me, it could be an improvement because he pulls the ball a good amount, which is nice with the Crawford boxes as well discussed. But to me, he's still a beast. He's still one of the top first basemen. Not like a humongous change for me, but maybe you can tell me I'm wrong.
No, he didn't change for me either. I've been a big Christian Walker fan, and if anything, I guess a signing would maybe make me be a little less high on him, but this certainly is not that situation with him going to the Astros. Definitely helped their lineup because they had a pretty big hole left by Kyle Tucker, and Walker isn't the player that Tucker is, of course. I think in real life, maybe it's a little bit closer to bait, but in fantasy, great spot for Walker. I don't really care about the Crawford boxes for him. He hits it out anywhere, Walker. So I think it's a pretty good signing, and I look forward to drafting him a lot because I think I'm going to be pretty ahead of ADP regardless of where he went than the other first baseman probably.
And speaking of ADP, for the month of December, we now have 12 DC, so a pretty good sample size here. Christian Walker has an ADP like 103, as high as 81. So definitely, you got to go get him if you want him type situation. And when Ryan and I were talking first basemen recently, I think maybe when you and I actually debating, it was like Walker and Casas and all those guys kind of going around each other. So pick your poison at the first base. Yeah, Pascantino goes at 108. It's right here. And Casas 117. There's kind of a little pocket right there. It's kind of spreading out, though, over since we last talked first base. Josh Naylor traded to the Diamondbacks. He'll take Christian Walker's spot over there. Many thought Pavin Smith was going to be doomed. Pavin Smith, they already came out and said it's going to be the primary DH versus right-handed pitchers. More to the reason behind that later on. But yeah, Josh Naylor leaving Cleveland, heading to Arizona. How do you feel about that one?
I think it's fine for Naylor. I was looking at the Guardians lineup today, looking at Jose Ramirez for some stuff, and it's ugly. So I think Naylor is going to do even better. I don't think there's going to be a huge drop-off. I know Naylor has put up pretty gaudy RBI totals the last few years, even in limited time. Like, the rate is just very high for him. So I don't think that – like, now he's hitting behind Corbin Carroll and Ketel Marte, as long as Marte is healthy. and he's going to be in front of Lourdes Gurriel, who's fine. And Suarez was, if Suarez, Eugenio Suarez, that is, can maintain what he did the second half last year, even not the full, I don't expect the full second half production for Suarez, but if he can be a portion of that, it'll help Naylor score some more runs. And just looking at the underlying numbers, Naylor isn't really one of the ones that kind of wows you with the barrel rate, the hard hit, the X stats, but he's like a solid compiler and a pretty safe spot. I definitely prefer Walker to Naylor. You mentioned they're kind of they're getting drafted in that similar pocket, but I view Walker more with Olsen and Alonso in terms of his profile, and Naylor's just kind of unique and he's valuable. But yeah, definitely, I would say it's a lineup upgrade for sure for Naylor.
Yeah, Naylor going an ADP of 92. He's going as high as 58. That must have been a aggressive drafter there. But I'm with you. He's going ahead of Christian Walker. I'll take Christian Walker all day long in that conversation. And it's nothing against Naylor. I've been Team Naylor. I still love the fantasy player of Team Naylor. But to me, it's like we saw the 31 homers. The most he's had prior to that was 20, given he played 152 games last year, which is 30 more games than ever. So that was a big improvement. The run production was great, which should still be pretty good, like you mentioned. So I think there might be maybe a little regression in the power. Like they have at 24 on Steamer. I don't know if he goes that low, if he plays 150 games again, because they have been 143 games. But I think he's probably a high 20s guy. And the run production should still be pretty good in Arizona. I just don't think he's this like elite guy. He's very, very good. But I think they need to like him in the – I think he could go between Walker and Pascantino, because Pascantino's power might not be the same, and I could understand the argument. But, yeah, having him that far ahead of Christian Walker is pretty wild to me. Paul Goldschmidt signs with your boys. You got Oldie on your team. You guys just got to sign someone every week, it feels like, right about now, ever since you freed up about $700 million that you're going to spend. What's your thoughts on Oldie in the Bronx, who we saw improvements in the second half last year, but we still saw he struggled with the fastball as he gets older. So how are we feeling with that?
Yeah, well, as a Yankee fan, I was fine with it. It's just a one-year deal, so not really committed to him in the long term, which I like. And we kind of touched on this when we did our first base debates last week or the week before, whatever it was. But he looks much better underneath the hood, Goldschmidt, than his season would have suggested, at least when I looked into him. Yep. Yeah, the fastball's been an issue for him for a while, and the K rate has been it's been increasing the last few years. He was at 26.5% last year, Goldschmidt. But the hard hit's still there. The barrel rate's still above average. The exit velocity is good. The X stats, like the XBA, XSLUG, XWOBA for him are all very good. And I didn't move him up because I think he's definitely behind the Vinny P, Berger, Bellinger, Casas group of first basemen. I have Goldschmidt at 12 right now. And I think he's kind of in a little spot on his own. And so I didn't move him any up or down, but I'm okay with drafting Goldschmidt. I think I don't know if I'm going to want to necessarily. It's just more of a, if it makes sense type pick, but I definitely like it. I mean, he's hitting fourth after Judge and like, I think Stan's projected to be behind him. And I forget how the lineup's projected on roster resource, but definitely it's a much better lineup than he was in St. Louis. And he still was kind of productive last year, Goldschmidt. And he's smart enough to steal still, even though he's not as fast as he used to be. But, and the Yankees, I think they'll let you run if you have the speed or the ability. With Goldschmidt being an old first baseman, maybe he only gets 10, but it's still better than nothing. So I like this for Goldschmidt, and hopefully he does well for my Yankees this year.
Yeah, I like the signing a lot. Like a lot of these first basemen we're talking about weren't that expensive, all things considered. And I'm sitting here as a Giants fan going, they're all better than Lamont Wade as an everyday first baseman. Can we do something, please? Goldie's got an ADP of 196. You say you don't know if you draft him. Well, I don't know if I draft him either, and I have multiple shares already. Welcome to the world of 15s. So this is what we do. And I'm okay with it. Like you said, like if we're looking at that kind of ADP, you're closing on ADP at 200 with a guy that if we see like close to what we saw in the second half last year. Now, and the big thing you mentioned, much better lineup, better hitting ballpark even. There's a lot, I think, to like with Goldie going to the Yankees. So I'm optimistic. It's good to sound like you at least are on board. Maybe not optimistic, but you're on board with the situation. And I'm wondering if his ADP starts going up here because he's only gone as high as 176. So he hasn't got like a massive bump since the signing, that's for sure. Carlos Santana signs that aforementioned Guardians lineup that you talked about. Roster Resource has him as the fourth hitter in the lineup right now, which is impressive. For fantasy purposes, I'm all aboard. I've been liking Santana in drafts anyways. ADP of 387 in December. He's gone as low as 448, as high as 351. Kind of felt like he was always getting a job somewhere, and he's been pretty serviceable the last couple of years, especially in deeper formats. So I'm cool with it. But what are your thoughts? Because you mentioned the lineup you are not a big fan of.
Yeah, I mean, in a DC, though, and at his ADP, I didn't know what it was until you just mentioned it now, but I'm a big fan of taking Carlos Santana, I'm sure. I'll be open to taking him once my draft kicks off, whenever that is. And it's just, I mean, when you look after him in the lineup, it's fifth is Lane Thomas, then Will Brennan in a platoon, Juan Brito, it's ugly. Yeah. But he's going to play every day, Santana. I mean, depending on how it goes for the Guardians, he could get flipped because it's going to be him and Jose Ramirez and Kwan doing all the heavy lifting this year, it looks like. Unless you're a Lane Thomas fan, I'm kind of okay. If he, like on Thomas, he's okay. But for Santana, he's a switch hitter, so he's going to play every day as long as he can hold up. He is about to be 39 pretty soon. But he plays every year, it seems like, and that could always change, of course. But I think especially we're talking DCs right now, he's a great pick. The average is a little low, but where he's going, it's hard to find average anyway. He's going to hit 20 homers probably. Probably score 70 at least and drive in roughly 70 probably too, since he's going to be hitting fourth. So it's definitely a good signing. And I have him as like a corner infielder almost in my rankings, roughly, I think. I don't think he would be a starting corner infielder for me, but he'd definitely be like my first base two potentially, or first base three for sure. I definitely like drafting Santana.
Yeah, usually when you're drafting, you don't plan on him being your first baseman or corner infielder. He's a great bench piece, depth piece that we've seen in recent years will get plenty of playing time on your DCs because it is great. Like the average is, 235, 240, which is not horrible, but not great by any means. But he's a consistent, 20 home runs, with about 140 to 150 runs in RBIs combined. He's doing that very, very well, even as he gets older. Now he goes back to Cleveland, where he spent most of his career, which I think is interesting. Really good for left-handed power. Hitting fourth, which, again, you mentioned the rest of the lineup's pretty bleak, but we had these same conversations last year in the preseason about the Cleveland lineup. It was after the fifth spot or so, it was ugly there too. And in the end, Josh Naylor had 108 RBIs. Our boy J-Ram does his thing. So it's feasible. Yes, there's been downgrades, but it's feasible. So I like it. I like the ADP. We'll see where it goes from there. Nathaniel Lowe gets traded from the Rangers to the Nationals. Lowe's been a guy that's never really tapped into the power some thought he might have. A lot of ground balls. Good OBP skills. What's your thoughts going to Washington? Because I'm very optimistic on this lineup to be better than a lot of people expect. If I think it's going to be a top 10 lineup, no. But I think it's going to be pretty interesting for fantasy at least.
Yeah, there's some interesting names for sure in the Nationals lineup. I like Luis Garcia a lot. Jose Tania is interesting. Cruz, I'm kind of in on. Wood, Abrams, a lot of good names for them for sure. I didn't adjust low at all in my rankings once the trade went through. I think it's just fine. I don't know if projections have adjusted yet or if they will at all. I mean, the Rangers were pretty bad last year and the Nationals were probably worse. But in terms of the surrounding cast, like we said, it's fine in D.C. I was struggling with low last when we did first base battles, and he's kind of in that fine CI range, I think. Definitely ahead of Carlos Santana. I would definitely put Lowe well ahead of Santana, but he's fine, and it doesn't really change much for me. It's just I don't know how the ballpark changes, but I mean the Rangers definitely have more upside as a lineup because they had a lot of down years last year, but a lot of the guys in the Nationals could just get better because they're pretty young, and I could help Lowe just as much.
Yeah, I think their lineup, it's going to lead to potentially more RBIs for Lowe. It should, because he was farther down the order in Texas.
Yes.
69 ribbies last year. We saw 82, 76, 72 previous seasons. I think he should be in line for 80 to 90 if he plays all season. I don't see how that's out of the range of possibilities. Maybe he runs into – he's the 15 to 20 guy at home runs. I know it's a large gap when it comes to that. But I think it was Michael Cecchini said a couple episodes ago when Ryan and I were talking about this it was last Tuesday's or Monday's episode, actually. We were talking about the news, and he brought up a good point. The Nats love to run, and Lowe is actually – he doesn't get a bunch of steals, but he has really good success rates. We saw 8 steals at one time in one season. So if he could somehow sneak his way into, a Goldie-type 10 stolen base season, that would be tremendous in this whole situation. So that's just a back-of-the-notepad thinking as well when it comes to Nathaniel Lowe. One thing I forgot to mention, and Uncle Ted reminded me, is with the Santana Naylor hole situation, a lot of people were paranoid about Manzardo. He's still going to play pretty much at DH, so I wouldn't panic too much on that. Just want to throw that out there. But biggest thing is, when does he get first base eligibility? So just want to throw that out there. Jesus Luzardo traded from the Marlins to the Phillies. Now, a lot of the reasons why Luzardo wasn't going high in drafts, Ben, is concerns of health. Well, the Phillies were willing to trade for him, so I'm willing to buy into at least good enough health to pitch most of the season. Could be totally naive in that. We're talking ADP of 326, as high as 273 in December, Ben, for Jesus Luzardo. What's your thoughts, though? Because, again, we don't know how healthy he is. That's fair. It's valid. But what are you thinking here?
He was the reason why I did pretty poorly last year, at least in terms of pitching. I was big on Jesus Luzardo. I love the step he took, the strikeout numbers, but he just wasn't healthy, it turns out. And I couldn't really predict that. There were concerns about the workload increase. People could have pointed to him jumping to like 170 innings after being in the low hundreds before that. Not the biggest jump, and we're expecting guys like Crochet to do that. Different pitchers for sure, but yeah, to your point about confidence in Luzardo because the Phillies signed him, I kind of agree, or they traded for him. I forget where I just did my pitching the other day. Let me look this up. I have Luzardo's my SP71 right now. That's out of caution. I don't know how that would fall in my overall rankings yet. I haven't gotten that far through them yet. But the strikeout rate was only 21% last year for Luzardo, but he had a 13.7% swing strike rate. So it seems like he got unlucky with the K rate. It should have been a little bit higher based on that swing strike rate. The ERA estimators, though, were not very good for him. But with the injury, like I said, it's tough to take all that at face value. I mean, in DC, it's a little bit of more of a risky pick because you don't know how he's going to bounce back. I don't believe I think he ended the year hurt. So I guess if he comes out pitching well in spring training, once we get the Fab drafts, he could probably really jump up the board since he was a top 100 pick last year. But yeah, I guess I'll have to see how my rank compares to ADP. But I like him as a high strikeout pitcher to fill out your rotation. Because guys like him, if where he's going, they can really help your team finish top of the standings if they hit.
Yeah, like where he's going in drafts, I'll take that chance all day. Just because, well, in a DC, you have so many depth pieces, so many guys are going to get hurt. You're not trying to draft guys that are going to get hurt, but at the same time, you're playing the game that if Luzardo's healthy, he's an SP1 or 2 on every team, manageable. And now you're drafting him in the 300s, where that's like your 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, depending on how you draft. Like, you're going down the list of pitchers there. So there's a ton of upside in that. There's also, potential for disaster. There's no denying that at all. But I'm very intrigued at that ADP. I'll be much more in, because I was hesitant. I didn't know there was really not a lot of reports coming out. It was just quiet. But then when you trade with the Phillies, they have to do a physical and whatnot. So they have to approve of his health. And that at least tells me they are getting something out of him. That's what I'm hoping for, at least. Sean Manaea resigns with the Mets. I don't have a ton here, except I was loving what Manaea did last year. I was already drafting him, hoping he'd continue his skills. Going back to the Mets, to me, just feels better because that's where he got his success.
Yeah, I looked at him the other day as well. And with Manaea, everyone knows how well he finished the year, I hope. And he helped teams really win their leagues if you had him. But he was kind of lucky. On the year, his BABIP was only 245. And I think it just kept dropping as he was pitching better in the second half. And everyone points to the sale arm slot adjustment, which, okay, it probably did help because it's a new look for hitters. But, I mean, the K rate wasn't the best on almost looking at full year stats. But I remember looking, and it wasn't fully that impressive. The K rate did go up in the second half for Manaea a little bit. I don't know exactly what it was right now, but if you look at, he had a 397 Sierra Manaea, a 404 XFIP. His XERA was 375, so that was the best of those three. His swinging strike rate on the year was sub 12%, which is, I guess, average. At least, I guess I'm happy that he's staying in New York because they could maybe help him sustain what he was doing. I'm open to drafting him for sure. I don't have I don't have my comparison to ADP right now, but I will be fine taking Manaea. It's just that I don't have high hopes that he's going to be an ace, kind of like he was in the second half.
ADP is around 183 in December, mm-hmm. which isn't too bad. Again, it's like your SP 4 or 5, something like that. First half ERA 3.46, second half 3.48, like you're talking about. So pretty good there. But when you go to the deeper numbers you were discussing, I pulled some up here. As K rate didn't go crazy, went from 24% in the first half, 26% in the second half, but the walks went down. He went from a 14% K to walk to 19.2% K to walk. I just have FIPs and X FIPs here, went 4.29 X FIP to 3.75 X FIP. So big improvements in that regard. And I don't know, I'm just a big fan of his. We saw, ground ball rate, fly ball rates were ground balls go about 3% increase in the second half, but nothing too crazy. But the strikeouts went up, more importantly, the walks went down. That's the big thing. He talked a lot about the arm slot and trying to mimic Chris Sale, which you've seen the pitching ninja side by sides are almost identical, which is pretty crazy to think about. So I just said, going back to the Mets can't make it any worse. You're not paying a premium for him. So I'm a fan of what Manaea can bring to the table. All right, Walker Buehler. This one is polarizing because you don't know what you're getting here. Walker Buehler signs with the Red Sox. $21 million. I think it's like $2 million less than the qualifying offer was, but gets out of town. We saw a horrific season coming back from Tommy John, just disastrous. Couldn't find the strike zone. Gets sent to Florida to work at the development program to figure it out. Comes back, still not great in the regular season. Dominates in the postseason for 10 innings. Looks phenomenal. Two appearances, 10 innings. Looked outstanding. What's your thoughts on this, Ben? Because I'm going to throw out an ADP to you real quick and. Yeah, if I can spell first. Buehler, ADP's 261, as high as 209, but let's say 260 for now. Walker Buehler.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know where to put him in my SP rankings. I kind of remember people saying the 200s, and I try to just throw him in that range because if you look at his underlying stats from last year, that is horrible. He only had an 8.2% swing strike rate, and like his zone contact against was over 90%, which is awful. So he wasn't missing bats. Yeah, he looked great in the playoffs, but I don't want to judge him on 10 innings in playoff baseball. Like, he probably had the adrenaline rushing. Maybe he made an adjustment that can stick going into this year, but even so, Buehler was always a popular early round fade because of his actual stats never really were supported by his underlying stats. So with that in mind, and I was never really a fan of Buehler either because of those reasons, I just have him there, and I don't know. I'll probably pass on him for other guys who I think are a little safer. And you said he came back from Tommy John. I think it was his second Tommy John as well. Second
Tommy John, yes.
And that's a little more concerning. It's kind of the same issue that people have, like me with McClanahan, how you can't really expect them to be the same pitcher as they were, definitely after the first, before the first, but even after the first one, after the second one, already occurring. It's definitely scary. I mean. Yeah, it's just a lot of ugliness for Buehler last year. And maybe if he looks good in spring training, I mean, that's always scary to go off of spring training too, because it's not everyday lineups and people are working on things. So I don't know. I probably won't, maybe on one team out of Buehler, but I'm not too optimistic about drafting him.
Yeah, I like the price tag. It's like Lizardo's even cheaper, but the idea of, okay, if he finds it, this is phenomenal. This is a phenomenal price tag. So in that kind of format, it's worth taking a shot. Like in a fab, even his ADP will probably be much higher by then. But like if it sticks in the 200s, that's a droppable player eventually. Like that's not a big deal, all things said and done. So I see the appeal. Uncle Ted loves him. He says Walker Buehler's this year's Jack Flaherty. It's a good comp if you want to go for it. There's similarities. Like Flaherty's 2023 at a 4.99 ERA. We saw a K to walk of 12.6% that year, a WHIP of almost 1.6. It was brutal. An xERA of 5.06, so he actually overachieved that season. Flaherty was bad. Flaherty's really bad. He's always battled injuries and command. Buehler hasn't really battled command that much unless he's coming back from TJ, which is a thing. So we'll have to wait and see on that. All right, I kind of joked in tongue-in-cheek that Pavin Smith is going to lock into the DH role because the man that was locked into the DH role in Arizona is now going to be in Texas for 2 seasons, barring a trade. That is Jock Jams. So this video game softball lineup just got even more video game softball-esque, with Jock Jams being the everyday DH for his right-handed pitching. And Ben, Jock's got an ADP of 359.
but also he lost athlete eligibility this year, which
That'll help hurt the ADP for sure.
Yeah, it hurts because I had Jock in my main event that cashed last year, and he helped a lot. But just the fact that he is going to be a platoon bat, and I learned the lesson last year, and I've said it before on your show that how it definitely hurts having platoon hitters. I know Uncle Ted loves them, so he's going to say lefty mashers all day, I'm sure, or something like that. But you miss out on at bats that other players could be getting you. So I know Jock's an excellent hitter when he's in versus righties. But now that with the platooning plus the UT only, maybe at the right price, I'll take him in a DC, but definitely not a target. It's just, it's more so the UT only and the platooning on top of it. Well, I said that again, but it's mostly the util only, and then the platooning doesn't help. I'll say that. But yeah, like underlying numbers though, he's one of the better UT only players. I have him behind Stan out of like the 12 that I have ranked right now. I have Jock ahead of Martinez and Yoshida and Manzardo. I think he's better than all those guys.
That's fair.
But yeah, it's just, it's tough. Like I said, fewer plate appearances and you're stuck to the utility. And I don't see Jock ever getting outfield anytime soon. So
no,
you got a plan for him being there all year round if you draft him.
Yeah, unless Texas has a gluttony of injuries, there's no chance Jock's getting – I don't say no chance. There's always a chance, but very unlikely.
They got hurt a lot, so who knows?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. All right, a couple of quickies I just wanted to bring up just to get your thoughts on these. Max Kepler signs with the Phillies. 1 year deal. Kepler will likely platoon in the outfield. There's multiple options there. Rojas probably platoons with Marsh. So Kepler could platoon like Weston Wilson's not even on. There he is. Weston Wilson's right there. He could be an option. Maybe Kepler faces lefties. Who knows? He wasn't that great against him recently. He's had some success in the past, but not great. What's your thoughts on Kepler joining the Phillies as it just muddies up the outfield even more? But ballpark upgrade for him.
It is. And yeah, he was kind of kicking the platoon issues with the Twins at times last year, Kepler. But now with the way the Phillies like to do it as much, if not more, I think, than the Twins, I consider him a platoon only back, kind of like how Roster Resource has it. And I was so happy to add him in like three of my four teams last year, Kepler. And he started out great. I remember, I think he had like a 400 BABIP. We did the BABIP show and Kepler was on fire when he came back from injury. And then he was just awful the rest of the year. So he's getting older now. He's 32, Kepler. I'm not too interested in drafting him, I don't think. It's if he's available in Fab, and I'll pick him up. But like I said, platoon bat, kind of I don't have a faith that he's going to do what I was expecting for last year, because I was kind of high on him in drafts before the season even started. And he didn't meet expectations. He was really only helped that 1 year by the happy fun ball, and he's kind of underwhelmed since then. He's had issues with average. And I'll probably stay away more often than not.
Yeah, ADP 454 in December, as high as 384. So some people have liked him a bit. He's gone as low as 515. So he's all over the board as you get in those later rounds of your drafts. Gio Urshela signs with the Oakland Athletics. They needed a third baseman. I guess they just went the veteran cheap route on that one. That's A's 101 these days. Gio's at an ADP of 587, as high as 441. So any thoughts on him? Like, to me, just like a fourth, third baseman in a DC potentially, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, he has value in DCs. I mean, the A's could be competitive this year somewhat. The pitching is a big question, but they made some moves. And Gio, he's a great defender, so his glove won't take him out of the lineup. It's just, I don't know if they have any prospects that are third baseman, but he should be a pretty good target for DCs, like you said. Other than that, that's it.
With you on that. And the last one, I'm really curious your thoughts on this one. It's Mike Soroka, signs of the Nats, you know, former big time prospect, kept getting injured. Last year with the White Sox, he did manage to throw 79 innings, pretty much. He had 9 starts, but most of it was out of the bullpen. Walk issues, but to me, it was good to see him just get on the mound. So my question is, he's in Washington right now. He has an ADP of 623, as high as 540. He's in the rotation. We know the past pedigree. Thoughts on Mike Soroka?
Well, I mean, he has a rotation spot right now, so he's definitely on my board for DCs. I don't have him I have him pretty low in the pitchers that I've ranked so far.
Fair.
But yeah, he said Soroka did have appeal in the past. So it's just an innings eater and a DC pick for me. Like, I'm not too optimistic that he's gonna be anything special. He had a pretty poor walk rate last year was almost 13%. Sirocco swinging strike was only 9.7%. Did manage to limit the hard contact, though. Pretty good exit velocity, average mile per hour exit velocity against, and the hard hit percentage was pretty low. So some positives, but in terms of generating strikes or limiting walks, it's not very good. So if there's no one really left on the board, and I want another starter who's going to be relatively there most of the year, I'll take a chance on him maybe. But other than that, though, I will say, though, the one thing that kind of stands out where I have him ranked is that he is by far the highest K rate of the other pitchers in the range where I have him. It was 24%, which at that point in the draft, this is like, he's like pitcher one or starter 149 for me right now, Sirocco. He's pretty down there, but just for that K upside alone, maybe I'd be more inclined to draft him versus the other guys I have around him. But I don't know. Like, so I'll have to wait and see when the time comes.
Yeah. So I don't know how, like, he's been so fragile. So it's concerning, but if you look at his strikeouts and his walks, it almost mimics what I just looked at with Jack Flaherty. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be next year's Jack Flaherty, but when we talk about his inconsistent guys going late in drafts, have had injury concerns. I'm not saying he's going to be Flaherty, but could he, instead of being like a 4.5 K per nine, could he drop it down to just like an even 3 or 2.5? That'd be humongous because the strikeouts are so good, like a lock. And that's a big jump. I get it. I'm just speculating, throwing into the ether that these things could be fun as well. All right, enough talking about Mike Sirocco and Gio Urshela and whatnot. let's get into some second base debates here and have some fun with this. Because like Ben said at the top of the show, I really enjoy doing these. I know he says he likes doing them. The listeners have responded well to them. It opens my eyes to a lot because I do a lot of my rankings early, just like Ben does, and we talk. And I'll tell Ryan for the Patreon, I'm like, hey, I know we posted these rankings, but we're going to have to update stuff, you know, probably sooner than later because I'm already having like changes of mind here. So usually what we do in behind the curtains for any of those listeners is what I've always done in the past. When I give out rankings, I have like a Google sheet and I'll give people the link to the sheet. They can't edit it, but I'll edit it freely. So it's always updating for them. And that way it makes it easier instead of waiting for like, you know, bi-weekly posts or whatnot. That's just a little behind the scenes curtain stuff. But you finished your second base rankings, I think a week or so ago. And we were talking about that. So we're going to do like we've been doing. I picked a handful of debates of players that are closely in the second base discussion on the ADP. Did you want to give your thoughts on the position now, or do you want to wait till we're done debating? Because I know you mentioned something at the top of the show about your thoughts maybe compared to what the kind of consensus is.
Let me look real quick. So I'll say something real quick now, I guess. Yeah, like you meant, I think it was before we went on air, maybe at the beginning, how there's no stud really at second base. Ketel Marte is the closest one, but as much as I love him, I had him a couple teams last year, always injured, or he kind of got out of that last couple of years, but he's older now, of course, and maybe he goes back to, he had a back issue last year. It was flaring up. So it gives me a little pause to take him at the 2-3 turn, which is where I have him ranked right now. But yeah, you guys like Semien, who dropped a ton. Xander has a lot of question marks. Then you have the 10, 15 homer and 30 steal guys like Renjifo, Turang, Jimenez, Stott. You have that profile to go off of. Then another faller, Torres. What's going to happen with India in the new park? Tyro was a shell of himself last year. And so I guess it depends on how optimistic you are as for bounce backs with a lot of these guys, or if you think that someone like Luis Garcia Jr. or McClain can take a big step forward. Garcia kind of broke out finally last year, but he still has a pretty decent ADP, I think. McClain, who knows what to do with him. And then even the mascot too. I think we touched on him for something pretty recently. Maybe it was the projection review, but how polarizing his profile is, because he went from decent power, not much speed, to no power and a ton of speed. What's going to happen now this year? So a lot of question marks at second. So I guess, so I think people who like the position or think they can take advantage of certain lower ADPs. But if you're looking at a whole, compared to other positions like shortstop, that's so top heavy, it definitely looks a lot worse. I guess it just depends on how you feel about each individual player and what your comfort level is with waiting or maybe not waiting, taking an early top 100 pick. And there aren't many of them, but I guess we'll, maybe when we dive into the battles, we might feel a little bit stronger one way or the other.
Yeah, I kind of sort of said it at the beginning of the show where I'm starting to learn to find pockets later that I'm willing to wait for and get to, because I'd rather pay up for some other positions early type thing, is so far is what I'm seeing. Really curious to see what you kind of start feeling as you draft too, because you'll see how the flow goes and that could change your opinion on things as well. But all right, first debate, we always start at the top of ADP and work our way down. Jose Altuve versus Ozzy Albies. Altuve, the second baseman off the board, ADP of 63. Ozzy Albies, the third second baseman off the board, ADP of 66. Ben, how do you see this one? Because Albies has been a very interesting take across the board so far this draft season.
Yeah, I have them pretty similar to ADP. I am higher on Albies than Altuve. And a little bit, I think I'm like a round higher on ADP with Ozzy than in general. I have him around overall 52. Albies and Altuve is more like 60 for me. So about half round difference between the two. But right now, I definitely prefer Albies. And I guess I'll talk about Albies first. He's a tough one because I liked his price last year. He was like a 2-3 pick in 15s, Albies. And he was finally going to hit in the top of the lineup. It was going to be like Acuna, then Albies second, followed by Olsen, Riley, and Ozuna's would be great for Ozzy. But then he got hurt. And the problem is he kind of has the, I feel like Aaron Nola is the popular every other year player. Albies is kind of the same way too on the hitter side though. He only played 99 games in 2024, 148 in 2023. He got hurt again in 22, full year in 21. And in those full years, he was 30-20 in 2021, 30 homers, 20 steals, and then 33 homers, 13 steals in 2023. And then in the two half seasons, he was not very good, even before he got – like he was hitting around 250 both years. And Ozzy's average has never been that good, but he's always – he's been great because of the volume and the lineup. He's only 27 still. He's shown that even with the bad splits, he's better versus righties or versus lefties than righties. So you kind of wish it was the other way around since there's more righties in baseball as starters. So it's more of a leap of faith with Albies because when you look at the underlying, like I have a Statcast up right now and it's pretty ugly from last year, but I forget what the injury was and he could have just had a slow start and then the injury prevented him from kind of getting to where he's used to being. But I think he can bounce back, especially in the fourth round when he's been going earlier in the past. And like I said, the lineup's awesome. The, his age is he's in the prime of his career. And I think he can just outperform what his underlying numbers suggest. And for those reasons, I have him slightly ahead of Altuve. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, Albies was out with a broken wrist for quite some time. And then when he returned, he only hit right-handed because he couldn't swing left-handed. So he came back a little early. So Albies' numbers, the beginning of the year struggles, I don't know what happens. He got hit by a pitch to break his wrist. But then afterwards, I kind of grained of salt the last month he played or whatever it was. This one's just tricky for me because I've always liked Albies a lot. We've seen like some minor declines here and there. Altuve gets older and continues to produce. And he's going to lead off, and Albie should hit second or whatever, so he should be up there too. It's very close. That's why their ADPs are close. I'm still going Altuve until he proves me wrong because he's been showing power and speed, where Albies hasn't been running as much lately either, which has been interesting the last couple of seasons with Ozzy Albies. And when he was the stud, we saw that 30-20 season in 2021. And then it was 8-3, hurt season, of course. Then in 2023, it was 33 homers, which is awesome. With 13 steals, which with 33 homers is good, but when you're drafting Ozzy Albies, I think you want the 2020 upside type guy potentially. And he hit for average in 2023. Every other year, he really hasn't been the 280 guy. He's been more 250, 260. So I still think Albies is a very good player. He's going to be 28, so could 100% prove me wrong. There's no denying that. Now, 2 years getting older, he's going to be 35. So if he falls off a map, that wouldn't be a shocker either. I guess Albies probably more power. Altuve more speed and a much better batting average. That's where I'm looking. So I'm going Altuve, but you can't go wrong either way. And I'm probably not paying for either one of them, to tell you the truth. If I did, I'd pay for Altuve. I'll say that much because I do like at least the floor he brings to the table where Albies has been kind of all over the place.
Yeah, with Altuve too, I mean, he's had awful underlying metrics for a while now, and I'm just waiting for them to finally fall off the cliff. He hasn't – for someone with such a good average, Altuve, his XBA hasn't been above 270 since 2018. And that's when he was in like 330. So I know he hits those kind of weak liners that go right into the front of the outfielders and he gets away with it. But like you mentioned his age, he's going to be 35. It's just, I don't know. I feel like Altuve is declining and Ozzy is kind of at his peak and maybe has a little bit more to offer, but
yeah,
I don't know. And for the speed portion. I mean, Altuve last 3 years, 18, 14, 22 steals. So not a whole lot more than Ozzy. Ozzy's probably going to out RBI him by 40 if he's healthy all year. Altuve will have the higher average for sure. So if you're more concerned with average, like a lot of people have been, I could see having Altuve ahead of Ozzy for that reason. But I hope to have a pretty good average with my hitters, like one or two hitters before. I would take Albies. And like I said, I haven't started drafting yet, but I feel like I'd be wanting a starter in this range anyway, just based on how I was drafting last year. Yeah. So I may not even have to worry about this debate when I draft. Maybe one draft I'll have to decide, but I still have faith that Altuve could be like, or Ozzy could be like 130, 115, and like a 270 hitter, which I think would definitely beat anything out that Altuve could do.
But yeah, you kind of nailed the biggest part there is that time of the draft, most of us are drafting our first starter or even a closer in a DC. That's just the reality of the situation. So I don't know if I really have either shares of either one of them, to be honest. I know I've looked at them in my queues, and I don't think I clicked that button so far. All right, next debate's a three-man debate here. We have Marcus Semien at 100.67, Matt McClain at 100.67, and Jordan Westberg at 103. So they're all going right next to each other. I'll preface, to me, Semien's kind of ahead of these guys, like kind of in a way of his own, but they're going right next to each other. So I want to bring it up for conversation because maybe I'm just overthinking it and you see something I don't. McClain coming off the injury, missed pretty much all of last season. And they got Westberg, who was outstanding before he got hurt. So how do you approach this Semien, McClain, Westberg situation?
Well, when I looked at Semien's underlying numbers, I was pretty shocked to see that they're almost identical to 2023's, which I had heard people say that before, but until I saw it is when I finally believed it. And even his sprint speed was still, I think, above 80th percentile, Semien. And for whatever reason, he just didn't run this year. And maybe it was like a Rangers thing. I know Adelis Garcia stopped running a pretty good amount. He is older, though, but I mean, as Semien's still showing he's fast enough to steal, so maybe they change it. I mean, after they see they had a down year, maybe they want to be a little more aggressive because they have Wyatt Langford now, who's pretty fast. And I think Carter, well, he's a back issue, but I think he has some speed too. So maybe the Rangers run more and Semien gets back to at least 10 steals. But for me, I have him about a round ahead of McClain, and at least I haven't done Westberg's overall rank yet. But I'm definitely leaning Semien. I think he'll bounce back. His XBA was still 257, which is right in line with Ozzy's and Altuve's, who are both going well ahead of him. Semien hitting first for the Rangers could score 100 runs again as long as he's healthy. I mean, that's what he does. So I think I think the discount's enough where I would definitely draft Semien first. So I'll let you talk about him before I talk about the other two.
Perfect. Yeah, I want to highlight Semien with you because I've never been the biggest Semien guy because you used to have to like pay an Altuve price tag. That's just not the world. Now we're talking around pick 100. Okay. I could see going there if you don't want to wait till the late kind of messy situation at second where there might be a diamond in the rough. I could see going, yes, pick 100. I want Marcus Semien. That makes a lot of sense to me right now. Batting average has never been like a big thing. He's done it like once or twice, but usually a 250-ish dude. That's just who he is. That's why projection has him at 253. Like you said, it's a 20 to 25 home run profile. You're hoping he gets back to 15 steals, and you think he would. But it's one thing everyone talks about, and I think it's just so remarkable. It's six straight seasons outside of 2020 where he's had at least 700 plate appearances. And we're always saying, like, hey, well, when you know he gets hurt, it's going to regress. If the dude gets hurt, barring a massive injury, he's probably still getting 650, which is ridiculous for the position. And if you just look at the projections, they have him for 695, which I'm just guessing without looking. It's probably one of the highest projected plate appearance totals on all of baseball right now. So even he just brings an amazing floor. I'm a boring drafter most of the time, so the floor is great. And so I've learned to lean into Semien much more this draft season. I don't think I have a share yet, but he's actually on my radar in years past. I just crossed him off. I'm like, nope, not doing it. And now I'm like, okay, based on position, based on price tag, based on boring, solid / really good production, I'm feeling it. And like Uncle Ted says, don't jinx it, Bubba. I know I'm probably ruining the whole thing here, but I am at least acknowledging the fact like who he is. This is more where he should be going. And I'm cool with 100.
All right. And then, so we agree on Semien. Next up, I have McClain. I do have Luis Garcia between Semien and McClain, though. I'm pretty high on Luis Garcia Jr. But with McClain, it's so tough with him. Steamer loves him. He's the 36th overall hitter, whereas Simeon's like the 60th for them, and then Westbrook's like 115th. But I think when we looked it up once on the projection show, they just copy and pasted McLean's projection from last year, essentially, which was so good. And then I remember looking at Simeon or McLean numbers from 2023, because of course he didn't play at all this past year. And I think one of the concerns I had, and maybe others did too, was his strikeout rate was pretty high. He still had a good average, McLean, but it was like high BABIP, and he didn't play for a full year, so that can easily happen. But I think I said this with Rhys Hoskins, and I mean, they're different players, but this one trait kind of stuck, is that McLean didn't have a high swinging strike rate. It was more like he was taking a lot of pitches, and he was getting a lot of called strikes, I think, and that's why his K rate was so high. So if he can just get a little more used to major league pitching, I mean, granted, he took the whole year off, so he's going to have a huge setback probably in this regard, in terms of being comfortable at the plate. If he just like swings a little bit more at those called strikes, he could definitely lower the K rate and have an even better average. And the power and the speed and the lineup position and the ballpark set him apart from Westberg for me. I do like Westberg, but before I talk about him, I'll let you talk about McLean. I just think McLean for now. I don't know if I would take McLean necessarily. I may just wait for where I have Westberg. I think based on ADP, I probably miss out on Westberg, which is fine. But I just think there's a little more upside with the skills, the ballpark, and the lineup for McLean. But I'll wait to talk about Westberg until you talk about McLean.
Two things with McLean that I like, and I do have Simeon, then Luis Garcia, then McLean as well. But McLean missing the whole year, obviously not ideal. I did like to see him playing in the fall league, getting at bats. We'll see how spring looks and everything, but the hype train was already real with him, and the power, the speed, all those conversations of how good the kid was. And his first cup of coffee, 16 homers, 14 steals, hit .290 in 89 games. It's 403 plate appearances, not a small sample. And he held his own just fine. So yes, how does the injury hold up? It sounds like they played it smart, took their time, got him reps. It's hard to believe he's going to be, and they've actually backed off of his projections a bit since I think we talked, because he was once projected for a 2020 season. So they have him at 25-18, but still 82 runs, 84 RBIs, 260. Like, that's what we want Marcus Simeon to be. So I can see the discussion there if you believe in the projections, but like you're saying, it's tough to believe in the projections when it's just copy pasted missed of the season. I'm still optimistic in McLean, I think, because to me, a healthy McLean, maybe it might be two or three more years from now, he's going to be top tier. Like, to me, he's got the 30-20 season we had from Albies. He's got that in his bag if he starts putting it together in that ballpark. So do you want to take the chance this year at pick 100, or do you want to wait? That's the million-dollar question. So I do like Matt McLean. I understand all the concerns, but I am a fan of what he could bring to the table.
Yeah, and then quickly with Westberg, he actually has the best underlying numbers, I think, from this group. I was very impressed to see his exit velocity, average exit velocity, his barrel rate, his hard hit percentage, and the XBA was 284, almost at a 500x slug. The problem though with Westberg is that he's going to hit so low in the lineup for the Orioles. He's projected at eighth for them. If he could end up cracking the top three, it'd be a whole different story. And one thing though that is in his favor is that the ballpark changes to left field in Camden Yards. I think that hurt him a lot with the wall so far out there. And before they made that change, I probably wouldn't have wanted anything to do with Westberg at this ADP, just because I feel like there's all his homers are gonna have to come on the road. Like, even with that barrel rate and the hard hit numbers, it was just so cavernous out there that you have to be like Aaron Judge to consistently hit homers still in that park as a right-handed hitter. And but I mean, Westberg has some other positives, multi-eligibility, like McLean as well, but Westberg's middle corner, he's second and third on NFBC at least. And I just like I said, it's primarily out of these three, it's the lineup position for Westberg. He's projected to hit eighth per roster resource, and I kind of agree with that based on who else is in the lineup with the Orioles. If he was hitting at least like just even fifth, it'd be a different story. But the loss of playing time or plate appearances, it definitely puts him third for me out of these three.
Yeah, you know that I love the skill set of Westberg. Had shares of Westberg last year, second base, third base, corner, MI is awesome. But I'm with the order of this: Simeon, McLean, Westberg. I think Westberg I have at ninth at second base for me. It might be too low for some, but I do have concerns about the plate appearances. He was very, very good last year, but I don't know. I have to see more to buy into him being this good type guy. I love them as I love them at a lower ADP. Don't like him so much at this. So just to highlight, you already mentioned all the big stuff there. I'm with you on this. And like it's the old story we used to have with Ozzie Albies. If all of a sudden Westbrook's hitting second in that lineup, okay, let's talk. We used to always say it with Albies. He's at our Michael Harris. Like you're at the bottom of the order, move him to the top. Okay, it changes everything. Same goes for Westbrook here. That's the problem. All right, next up here, we have a fun one. Xander Bogaerts coming in at 154. Luis Rengifo at 161. I like it for multiple reasons, because if we're talking Luis Rengifo, but secondly, we talked about this in the projections at one point. The projections love Luis Rengifo. So let's have some fun with this ADP debate here. Bogaerts first, Rengifo, Ben.
Yeah, I actually have it. It's funny. So my second base rankings go after Semien Garcia, McLean, Westberg, Xander, and then Rengifo. So this is all – I'm all right in order, basically. I was debating moving Bogaerts around earlier today just because of how blah he is. He's always hurt, it feels like. But Xander also has kind of like with Ozzie and to some degree Semien, he's always kind of outperformed, and even Altuve too. Xander's always outperformed his underlying numbers. Like his XBA has never been that good for a 300 hitter. It's always like in the 260s, 270s. Last year it was 264. But for whatever reason, Bogaerts always just outperforms it, and he's become a batting average asset. So I'm always in the back of my mind, I'm worried that he's going to kind of lose the average one of these years, especially with all the injuries that he has. But with Xander, at least I know what to expect. I kind of alluded to it with the Rengifo before, and I'll wait to get deeper into his profile. But Xander's like a solid 15-15 floor, I think, and he's going to have decent runs and RBIs for the Padres lineup, even if he's hitting a little bit lower than you'd like. He's projected for sixth right now on Roster Resource. If he was fifth or fourth, it'd definitely be a little more appealing. But he's not far behind Rengifo, at least in Steamer's eyes. Xander's hitter 77, Rengifo's 66. But, I mean, I don't want to go off of just one projection system to say that Rengifo's going to be better than Xander anyway. But I think just for the stability that Xander brings, that's why I have him ahead of the mascot, but not by much. I mean, they're right, like I said, they're eighth and ninth for me. And if something happens where they say Rengifo is going to run a lot more and his power looks like it's back in spring training, I could easily prioritize Rengifo. But for now, I have Bogaerts, and I'll wait to dive into the mascot until you talk about Xander.
Yeah, I have the mascot eighth. I have Xander 11th. So that'll give you a precursor to this. And again, stuff's going to keep changing, so maybe they won't be that far apart at some point in time. But with Xander, it's a very boring profile, but even more boring than Semien, who I said I liked his boring. Xander does it for average outside of last season, which is great. Xander plays a lot, but he always plays hurt. He actually went on the IL this past year for the first time, it feels like, in forever, because he always just plays through it, and it affects his overall production. He's going to get you know, like you said, he's like a 15-15 guy, so if that's what you want, with like a 270 average, which is not bad, that's fine. That's more of a middle infield profile to me than a second base profile is the problem. But I can see the appeal with Xander Bogaerts. So I do like him. He's also going to be 32. So how much can he keep bouncing back from all these consistent, constant wrist and whatever injuries? That's the question. Good lineup, though. I like the Padres, obviously. That's always a good one. But for me, with Xander, I just kind of stayed away from him for forever, except, like, I loved him in Fab last year because of the batting average upside. But he's really not a power bat anymore. Never really was, honestly. Steals kind of fell off a bit last year, given he missed more time. So maybe they're on a per-game basis similar. But I'm just concerned about the overall profile of Xander continuing on, basically. Now, you can give me the injury conversation with Rengifo. I totally get it. So that's fair. I think the ceiling, like Bogaerts is the floor play here. Rengifo is the ceiling. So what do you have on Rengifo?
Well, one positive in Rengifo's favor, besides being the mascot, is that he's projected to hit it higher in the lineup, probably second for the Angels, hopefully. I mean, with Neto coming back or being hurt, it could always change, and Trout's always hurt too. But who knows? But for now, Rengifo may hit the top lineup, so that's a check in his favor. But just the way he's flip-flopped his profile last year, Rengifo, I don't know what to expect, because he went from being like a mid-teens homers guy with 9 to 10 steals. He was now like a 6 homer guy with 20 steals in half a year. So completely flip-flopped his entire profile. The barrel rate plummeted. What was that?
And hit 300.
Yeah, like he was a 260 guy or 250 guy, and then he hit 300 out of nowhere. I had him on a team, and I was loving what I was getting from him, but it was unexpected in a good way, I guess. His barrel rate was only 2.5%. Renhifo, his hard hit was sub 33%, and he hit 300 like we just mentioned. His XBA was 261, but like I mentioned with Xander and Altuve, it's easy to outperform XBA. I don't know how sustainable it is, but Renhifo did that last year. I have him one spot behind Xander, so I could easily flip them tomorrow if I feel like it. But it's just a lot more question marks with Renhifo than Xander for me, and I think that's the main reason why I have Xander one spot ahead of him for now. But like I said, it could easily change in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I get all those concerns with Renhifo, the injuries and everything. Healthy, he's way better than Xander for me, but there's a million questions. Like you also highlighted, the power disappeared last year. Was that because of the injuries? Now became more of a contact, just get base hits and run guy. There's so many questions with Luis Renhifo besides just the mystery of the mascot. So I'm with you. I'm obviously Team Renhifo over Xander, but that's why they're getting drafted next to each other, and that's why they're pretty much up for debate. All right, next one here. Andrés Giménez, new member of the Toronto Blue Jays, and Bryson Stott. Giménez, 171. Bryson Stott, 179. And when I've talked about these two players in the past, there are a lot of similarities, it feels like, in stat lines, at least. There might be different profiles in skills, but stat lines. What's your thoughts on these two going neck and neck?
Yeah, I'll just put them together because they're like the same player for me. I have them back to back. I have Terang in between Renhifo and these guys. I feel like Terang's the leader of this group of players. He's like okay. He's like the champion, and then Giménez and Stott want to be Terang. Like right in line with Renhifo, they have almost 3% barrel rates. Giménez was 2.8, Stott was 3.6. Giménez had a sub 30% hard hit rate last year, so I think any hopes of 15 homers for Giménez bouncing back, at least with his profile currently, I don't expect that to happen. I think 10's probably optimistic for him. Stott managed to have more power with this profile last year, probably because of the ballpark, probably plays up a little bit more. But with Stott, with the Kepler signing, the roster resource thinks that Stott gets kicked down to ninth now, and he was platooning last year. Yep. It seemed like. Based on his at bat or distribution, based on what I looked at, Stott was still mainly a full time player. But we talked about with Kepler and some other players on the Phillies, they like the platoon, and Stott wasn't very good with lefties, I believe, when I looked at him. So they're back to back, but I have Giménez one spot ahead of Stott. I think Giménez is projected to bat more in the middle of the lineup for the Blue Jays. It's not nearly as good of a lineup, but I think those extra plate appearances for now put him over the edge than Stott for me. And I think I mentioned it when Giménez was – I think we talked about the trade on one of the other shows. I could see Giménez hitting second for the Blue Jays because their lineup's a lot weaker. And the way Roster Resource has it now, the Blue Jays are pretty top-heavy. I think it goes Springer, Bichette, Vlad, and then they have whoever's fourth now, like Will Wagner or something. I forget who's there now, but it's not good. So, and I think I could see Giménez moving up to the top just to kind of lengthen a little bit. And for that reason, I have Giménez one spot ahead of Stott. But if you need steals, it's why you draft these guys. But other than that, I wouldn't expect any power and subpar averages probably.
And that's the most important part of this conversation. You only draft them if you need steals. I've always been a believer that Giménez has more pop than he has. He had the 15 and 17. Like he dropped off the 9 home runs last year. So in reality, if you can get 15 to 20 home runs with 30 steals from Giménez, that's outstanding because with the back-to-back 30 steal seasons, basically a 250 hitter. Like I've always been a little higher on Giménez than it feels like a majority of people are. They're really skeptical, but it's like we always say with like Matt Chapman's of the world, plays great defense, he'll be in the lineup every day. Giménez is a gold glover. He's going to be in the lineup every single day, barring something crazy. It's like you said, those plate appearances, they're going to rack up, and if he somehow finds his way into a couple more home runs, the steals will always be there. That's not going to stop unless Toronto just tells him not to run, which would be asinine if you're going to trade for him. Like, you know what you're getting there. But we've seen coaches do crazier things. So I'm definitely Team Giménez in this one. I've also been burned by Bryson Stott. Maybe I'm biased. But once they started platooning him last year, I was just all out. I'm like, I'm not going to chase stolen bases on a platoon guy. You can stream stolen bases. You don't need to play that game on your bench type thing. Maybe they let him play like towards the end of the year, they let him play more versus lefties. I'll admit that it wasn't great, but at least they let him play. Young players need to get the at bats. That's fair. So maybe he figures it out. Maybe he doesn't, but in a vacuum, I still have Andrus Jimenez. Rather easy for me, but I'm a little biased as well. All right. The next one we have here, this one's easy for me too. Anyone's listening to me talk about this for a long time, it'll be real easy to know who I'm picking here. You got Luis Arraez, ADP of 192, Nico Horner at ADP 200. How do you like this one, Ben?
This is funny. So I have Nico I have him way down. I have Nico down as far as I do only because of the injury uncertainty. I actually have Nico as my 21st second baseman and Arraez as my 22nd. So I just don't want to draft Arraez because I don't want to have that profile in my lineup if I can avoid it. But with Nico, I would have him probably ahead of Stott and Jimenez.
Yes.
And maybe even Bogarts too if he was healthy, because he is what those guys – Horner is what Terang, Jimenez, and Stott, and last year's Renifo, what they want to be. He's like the class – he's the best version of the low power, ton of steals, good average, pretty good runs profile. But if we get more information about Horner being healthy to start the year, I'd move him way back up my rankings. But no matter what happens, though, I still have him ahead of Arraez just because Arraez has – well, I mean, it's actually kind of funny, though. Nico had a lower barrel rate than Arraez last year, but
it's hard to do.
It is when it's 1.2 for a Horner, you can't go much lower than that. The hard hit was actually worse than Jimenez's too, but at least Horner has a much better average than the other guys. So that's why he separates from those, the ones we just talked about. So yep, it's Horner for me. I mean, if he's hurt though, and like we get bad news that he's going to be out a while, then I'll probably take him off my board and then I'll be more willing to draft Arraez. But for now, it's definitely Horner for me.
Yeah. So I'm just looking stuff up here. He had surgery in October for a flexor tendon injuries, basically like a Tommy John type deal. Yeah. It looks like he has the brace because the reports say the timeline is 6 to 9 months for a pitcher. But a position player shouldn't be as lengthy as we're saying. So it's one of those, does he come back in DH? Do you want Nico Horner to come back into your DH? That's a question. To start the season, be 4 months post injury, 6 to 9 for pitchers, 4 is pushing it probably. So, like in my mind, he's probably missing the first month of the year. Is what I'm thinking. If these reports are accurate, that's a big if. But if he only misses a month, I probably still have him over Arraez personally. I've always said it. I don't chase batting average. It's the rabbit of hitting. He gives you nothing else. Really at all in your profile. So I know people can build a winning team around that batting average source. A lot of people do. It's not my cup of tea. I just can't do it. So it'll be Nico for me, even with the injury concerns, but you made a great point. If it wasn't for the injuries, I'd have him even higher. I need to move him down in my rankings due to the injury stuff. Now that we got a little more, still not perfect information on the injury, but at least a better timeline. Like he does need to go down my board quite a bit to justify the situation as well. All right, this one's kind of fun, a little bit. At least it sounds like it's fun to me. Gleyber Torres, ADP of 211. Mikel Garcia, 213. Garcia probably not leading off anymore. Torres looking for a team. So how do you decipher these two?
It's actually a pretty big gap for me. I have Torres as 13 right now, and I have Garcia as 24. So not really close. It's not my Yankee bias. I mean, if you were a Yankee fan, you'd probably hate Gleyber right now because of how bad he was most of the year. But he did do well in the second half in the playoffs, but with no power. I mean, this is a huge discount for Gleyber. I know our friend, she's in your Patreon with Ryan. Jenny Butler is always big on the ADP fallers, and Gleyber is one of them. He was a top 100 pick last year, and I even kind of reached for him in my auction that I did because he was everyone's favorite second baseman. He was going because of like the power and the speed profile, good average, good lineup, solid runs and RBIs. And for whatever reason, he just did horrible, Gleyber. But I still have faith that he's a better hitter than what he showed us last year. I mean, the underlying numbers, there's nothing really that stands out. I mean, if anything, he didn't chase a lot. He had a pretty good walk rate, but the barrel rate was pretty low. The hard hit was pretty low. The expected stats weren't very, like the XBA, X-Slug weren't very good for Glaber, but I think he could bounce back. And at this price, I'm willing to take that risk, at least in a couple spots. And I'll stop there before I talk about Michael.
I know I've always been a huge Glaber fan. I've always enjoyed the price discount, quote unquote. It seems like we always get with Glaber because he hasn't put up that monster season we saw, but he's been a very consistent force, as you basically mentioned, in fantasy. So to get him at this late of an ADP, I know he's unsigned. I'd find it hard to believe he's going to sign somewhere that's not going to play him regularly. I guess the longer he waits, that might be the reality. But I think he's too good to platoon, personally. Again, I'm biased. Like you said, other Yankees fans might disagree right now with that comment. But if you look around baseball, he's better than a lot of second basemen out there. Like, it's pretty easy to decipher that situation. Like, now, you can go to Seattle. That would suck for offense, but he should play there for sure. So, like, there will be places where it's not great, but there should be a lot of options of where it is great. So I'm with you. I love Glaber. I'm not going to reiterate a lot of things you said, but I have Glaber. Again, I'm going to change things because I need to move Nico and some other guys. I have Glaber at 14. I have Michael at 23. So you and I, we were both kind of a distance apart on these two. So with that being said, anything nice you want to say about Michael Garcia since we both basically buried him in our rankings?
It's not really his fault. No. I mean, it is his fault. So when I looked at Michael, I think his XBA was 264, and he really hurt your average last year. And for someone who's so fast and hits a lot of ground balls, I was really surprised that he must have just gotten lucky with where his ground balls went, because Garcia struck out only 16.5% of the time. He made a pretty good contact rate, 85.6 overall. He didn't chase a lot. I mean, one of the appealing parts of Garcia going into last year was how hard he hit the ball, and then if he could elevate it, okay, then maybe he hit like 15, 20 homers. I mean, that never happened. And then he also kind of lost playing time late in the year. I forget who was playing over him at third base, but it was kind of stupid, in my mind at least. But I was going to have a fantasy perspective, of course. And the other thing, too, is now that they have India, who could very well get hurt. Garcia has lost the leadoff spot, I think, and he's projected to hit like eighth or ninth. And with the batting average risk that he's shown us, and he didn't take the power gains that we were hoping for, and he's not scored nearly as many runs now, because his steals and runs really kept his value pretty high last year, Garcia. But I mean, in a DC, I'd be gladly take him, because his profile kind of fits the Stott, Jimenez, and he's the lesser average version of those guys, maybe with a little more power upside. But everything going on in Kansas City, I just don't, with the uncertainty of the playing time all year long and the lower lineup position, I'm not too optimistic about drafting him right now. But if he falls late enough, I don't know what, I think we're behind his ADP, or where is he? Michael Garcia.
He's the 16th second baseman.
Yes. Yeah. So we're not going to be drafting him right now with the way we have him ranked. But if something happens where he falls, I'll be glad to take him, but I'm not going to take him right now where he's going.
Yeah, I'm not going to echo too much more of what you said, but like, I love the speed. I thought his average would be better. The biggest reason we liked him last year, top of the order, not going to be there. The guy that is at the top of the order, you mentioned Jonathan India. He's going 40 picks after Michael Garcia right now. I'll take that all day long, right? Like, that ADP makes zero sense to me. Now, the highest India has gone 233, which is still technically behind Michael Garcia's ADP, because Michael's gone as high as 183, as low as 241. So people are going for that speed, apparently, where I think India gives you a little bit more everywhere else than Michael Garcia. So I'll take that today and twice on Sunday. All right, the last one we have here, and this probably depends on what you're looking to draft at this point in the draft. It's Brandon Lau, ADP 247. Let's say 246.67. Colt Keith, 246.83, basically the same pick. I'm going to bite my tongue now and let you go before I try to say too much, but this is a very, very interesting situation, and I'll say I've usually been anti-Brandon Lau, not as much so this season, though. So what do you have on these two?
The gap between them and my second best rankings is almost the same as Glaber and Michael. So I have I have Brandon Lau at 19, and I have Cole Keith at 29. So I am way lower on the market. So
we are the opposite on this one. Okay.
Oh, we're the opposite now.
I have Colt Keith 16th and Lau at 22nd.
Okay. So we're not really far off on Lau. It's only a few spots, but we're way off on Keith.
Yeah.
Well, with Lau, I mean, everyone knows what he's going to be. He's a platoon second baseman with power, probably going to hurt your average. I'm a little more optimistic, though, because of George M. Steinbrenner Field is going to be where he's going to be playing, at least for the first third of the year, basically, and then he's going to be on the road the rest of the year. So I don't know, but also with Lau, he has a bad back. He always gets hurt. So only if I really need power and I have my second base spot open will I probably take him in a draft. It's kind of a niche opening, but yeah, so I don't know. And with Keith, Roster Resource has him playing full time for the Tigers. In my eyes, he was a platoon bat last year, unless that changes this year. I know he did come on pretty strong after a pretty slow start. Let me pull up his month by month splits, Colt Keith, because if you look at the year on the whole, it's pretty uninspiring. He only had 13 homers, 54 runs, 61 RBIs, 7 steals, 260 average, and that was a full year. Basically, he played 148 games, which is surprising considering how much he struggled. So it's good that the Tigers stuck with him all throughout the season. I mean, he really had 1 month where he had 7 homers. Other than that, he had 0 in April, 2 in May, 2 in June, 7 in July, 1 in August, 1 in September. The underlying numbers for him, what I have here for Keith, are a 5.6% barrel rate. I don't view him as very fast. He only stole 7 bases. So if he's going to be your middle infielder with that bad of a barrel rate and not stealing bases and just an okay average. And the Tigers are better, but they're not the best lineup. And I view him as a platoon bat too, like I said. So all those things have me kind of low on him. Projections wise, I have him lower than projections for sure, but I just don't see it right now with Keith. And I mean, like I said, low is risky as it is, but at least I know he has pretty good upside.
Yeah. I guess the thing for me with Keith is it's something I tend to do, and like Ryan and I will kind of go back and forth on this a lot, is with young players, I'm willing to give them the bump type thing. Like, he played a full season. He learned a lot, is what I'll say. He played hurt at times, still had 13 homers and 7 steals and like a 260 average. Yeah. So it's one of those, like, to me, he's got a similar stat line potential. Because I also think the Tigers are going to be much better. Now, the ballpark obviously cripples him. But sub 20% K rate. Throughout the minors, he had a 10% plus walk rate, which maybe he can figure out with more time in the bigs. But for me, just I think there's a lot of decent, 260 batting average. We're talking ADP of 246. So we're talking middle infielder at this point. If you're waiting, he's your starting second baseman. I don't know if that's where I want to go with this, but I guess if you really wait, you can. But you're talking about a guy last year in the minors, 27 homers, 3 steals. He hit over 300. I know it's double A and triple A, so grain of salt stuff. But he showcased power, is my point. He showcased batting average skills. I think there's more to him than what we saw last year between injuries and just first time in the bigs. In the minors, he had a much higher fly ball rate. Like, the ground ball rate last year was 2021 and 2022 numbers. 23, a lot less ground balls, more fly balls. So maybe it's an approach change. Point being, I like to give these younger players a chance to prove that they can develop more. So I'm willing to take a chance on some of them later in drafts. Not as early like Ellie De La Cruz last year. I wasn't paying the freight for that. Guys later in drafts, I'll pay the premium if I have, or the discount if I have to, per se, and see if they can take the bump. So that's my thoughts on Colt Keith. Brandon Lau, I kind of like this year at his ADP, especially in a DC where you can pick your chances to play him because you'll have depth at second base. So play him at home while healthy and let him just hit home runs and then bench him in a lefty heavy week on the road or whatever. And then when he gets hurt, you just bench him. So I don't mind Brandon Lau in a DC this year. And usually I just can't even click the button at all.
Real quick before we go on, question for you. So regarding Colt Keith, I'm looking at my rankings and similar profile players who I like better than Keith. Do you think he deserves to go ahead of Jake Cronenworth and Spencer Horwitz?
See, this is where it gets on. Horwitz, I had low because of his playing situation before traded. I think he still goes above Spencer Horwitz. Horwitz better batting average. I think they have very similar power, and Keith might actually run more. But they're okay. Very close. Cronenworth's a guy that I've already admitted to some I need to reevaluate more. I think it's when we talked about him in that first base one last week.
Yeah.
I have him below Keith now. I'll probably move him above Keith. But they're close to me. But yeah, I'd probably have Cronenworth over Keith, yes.
Well, if you did move him ahead of Cronenworth ahead of him, you like I do, you'd be against the market at least right now because people still don't like Cronenworth very much. Which I get why he's probably more boring than Bogaerts, but I think the run production is a little bit safer with Cronenworth, and the power should at least be the same, if not better. I think so. This is an interesting comparison. I don't know. Just curious what your thoughts were with those two.
No, it's fair. It also is a way to kind of sum up second base in a nutshell right now. Yeah. This is why people say it's like either take one of the quote unquote elites early, or you can go ahead and wait in the drafts and take some other options. So I was saying this is what kind of sums up second base in a nutshell is you either take elites early or you go and just kind of look at this pool and either just wait and try to take a dart throw or go get a guy for steals or go get a guy. Like you use second base to almost fill your roster like needs is what it comes down to. It's a weird position for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll see there.
Sorry for bouncing it for a second.
All good. At first I thought I did it, so we're all good. All right, couple listener questions here, and we will wrap her up for us. Our buddy Martin Sikulski says, the depth at second base in 2025 has been widely discussed and is aided by multi-position eligible guys like Betts, Westberg, and McClain. If you're waiting until round 15, around ADP 170, who are a few guys you'd be willing to target, Ben? So if we're going post 170 here, Jimenez, Stott, Rise, Horner, Glaber, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, if you need steals, I would definitely go Jimenez. If not, maybe wait a little bit and grab Glaber. I think
take him
for that upside. It'd be Jimenez or Rise. I mean, yeah, Jimenez or Stott, excuse me. I mean, if Renjifo falls a little bit, go for him first, but probably Renjifo, Jimenez, and then Glaber for me as the three big targets.
Yeah, we're pretty much in the same boat just based on the ADP. We're talking about here, like I'm again, Jonathan India at 253. I'd swipe up in a heartbeat, but in that range, the Jimenez, if Rengifo were to fall, I love Glaber, like we talked about. A guy I can't figure out at all, and I want to draft him, but I stay away, is Jackson Holliday. I can't figure out what to do with Jackson Holliday at all. All right, next up here, we have Richard Sands in a DC. Who do you prefer for a backup second baseman in the 350 to 400 range? Gavin Lux, Nick Gonzalez, Mount Massey, and Ha Sung Kim, the new KBO guy, not the Padres, Ha Sung Kim, or someone even later, if you have someone even later you like. But out of that list, Lux, Nick Gonzalez, Massey, Kim, or someone later if you so choose.
Well, I have Ryan's boy a lot higher than those other names.
Mount Massey?
Yeah, I actually have him ahead of Cole Keith in my rankings.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, this is this is a show, but hey, I did this before ADP. I even look at ADP.
To
so
each their own. I'm not gonna knock it. So
I mean, if he's that much lower, I'm not gonna draft him nearly that high. Obviously, I'll have him sit there on my board for a long time. But Massey has pretty good aligning numbers, I think. And I don't know, Lux could lose his job. He's a ninth hitter platoon bat. Nick Gonzalez is intriguing, but yes. I like Massey more. I do have Lux ahead of Gonzalez. I don't know if I would actually draft him that way. Lux could easily lose his position. I think you were talking about like Betts gives them, and even Edmund, they have the flexibility to move tons of guys around if they wanted to sign Teoscar, play Pajas. Lux could easily get the boot. So I guess my answer would be Massey. And for the other guy, the Ha Sung Kim clone, Ha Sung Kim, whatever is that his name? Ha Sung? Yeah.
I'm probably butchering it. I apologize. Ha Sung. I apologize.
Yeah, me too. I haven't heard it enough to get it down yet. Yep. I've heard he has zero power, so he would be kind of like Xavier Edwards. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to draft that type. I mean, I guess in a DC, if you want a steel upside player, maybe take him, but who knows if he even signs to be a starter wherever he does sign. So,
all right. For me on this list that Richard gave, I do like Nick Gonzalez a lot, but like you said, Ben, there's a world where like Nick York or something screws that all up. So I do like Nick Gonzalez a lot in that world. If I go off of this list to give him a couple names, I love Tyro Estrada at pick 400. Big fan there in Colorado. He's on as high as 302 now, so that could obviously change. I really like Caleb Durbin. He has an ADP of 400. He's gone as high as 290, so we'll see if that continues to change. So those are two for you. But if you want an even later one, just like for bench depth, I've slowly started to like in DCs, and you can totally tell me if I'm crazy, Ben. It's probably not even ranked in your rankings. Is Lennon Sosa for the White Sox. And yes, it's ugly. It's the White Sox. I know. Everyone can turn the show off now if you'd like. But he's second base, third base eligible. ADP's 451 right now, so going super late. Projected to hit sixth in the order, which, again, doesn't matter where you hit the order. It's probably not great. But 25 years old. It's a guy we've known has had power in the minors. Should play every day. He's got a similar, like, projection to Colt Keith, if you really want to get technical here. So it's just one of those that I could see an upside with a Lennon Sosa, middle infield, corner infield kind of guy that's free, depth piece in a DC. I don't hate the idea is all I'm trying to say.
I like that. Another name I'll mention too before I talk about Sosa real quick is Dylan Moore, if you can absorb the bad batting average. Yep, he is a great DC player. He has four eligibilities, and he can steal and has power. But yeah, I have Sosa one spot behind Nick Gonzalez in second base rankings. He had a 282 XBA Sosa, a 6% barrel rate, which isn't awful at this point in the draft. Yeah, I was kind of impressed with how not bad his underlying numbers looked. So I like that call too.
Yep. All righty. Good to hear. Good to hear. Jeff Biddle, a good listener of the show, fun listener. He goes, not a question, just speaking for the masses. Let's eliminate the requirement to carry a second baseman on our roster. So kind of how we talked about some people don't even like the position. Got one right here, Jeff Biddle. Yep. Not a thing. The last one we have is our buddy Michael Cicchini has a couple things for us. Altuve, buy or fade at his ADP. The data has trended down, but he may just be a guy who always beats it. Also, he's old. I'm still buying it if you want to go early, but like we said, that's usually when we're going pitching. Would you buy or fade at the ADP?
Yeah, based on how I have it ranked, I would be buying him. But like you said, I may be looking for starters at that point in the draft. So wait and see.
And then Michael asks, Marcus Semien, maybe I'm on an island fading, but his steamer numbers make him at best par or even slightly overdrafted.
Steamer has Semien as hitter 60, which I'm sure is ahead of where he's going. I doubt there are 40 pitchers going in the top 100, which is where Semien's kind of going. Actually, it's exactly 100. I think it's fine. Like I kind of said before, I think Semien could bounce back to being who he was in 2023. The speed was still there. At least the underlying data was still there. And it's definitely not a pick that you'll feel good about if you take him because of how much he declined last year, or how it seemed like he declined. But I think him hitting leadoff for the Rangers, I think they're going to bounce back a little bit. And I think it's fine. I mean, it's not going to be for everyone. You have to make sure you have a good average in case he does underperform again, Semien, but I think it's okay. But I get why Michael is a little hesitant to buy in.
Yeah, like kind of what we talked about. It's boring to me. He's not going high as he used to, so there's at least a conversation to be had. But yeah, it's like I haven't clicked the button. I understand it more, but I have not clicked the button yet about Marcus Semien. All right, Ben, we'll wrap it up there. Another fun set of debates here. Second baseman is not the most fun position. That's just the reality of the situation. And I can't wait to get your thoughts actually after you do a draft, because you'll get to really experience the, wow, do I have to take this guy now? Because it gets even worse type conversations in your head, because that's kind of where it gets to. And especially in DC where you know you need depth, so you can't just wait forever. In a fab league, I literally could tell myself I'm going to wait till like round 24 or something and just take whatever's sitting there. I'm being facetious, but you guys know what I'm trying to say here. In a DC, you have to have pieces. That's what makes it tricky. So I'm curious to see your thoughts there. But final thoughts before we wrap up tonight's episode.
I don't see a lot of steals, guys, except for that pocket. I mean, all the guys we talk about late don't really steal a lot. Maybe with the exception of Michael Garcia, I think, but he could even lose his job though. So yeah, should be fun. Maybe I'll just draft Marte and not have to worry about it, but
that's where the Altuve thing looks more attractive. If you just pick differently, it's like, just take that potential 2020 and move on.
Yeah. buy back. I mean, or just take Luis Garcia. I think we're both ahead of the market.
I love Luis. I do have a handful of shares. I think that's like you're saying, if it's a draft, I am going second base aggressive. That ADP of like 116, I'm a big fan of jumping in there for sure.
Yeah. So wait and see. You'll definitely be updated with my draft whenever it does get going. So see what happens.
Looking forward to that. And Ben will be back again next Thursday. We'll move to shortstops, keep the debate train rolling and talk some more news and eventually get into more. We'll keep doing debates because they're fun, and then we'll eventually move to some other topics of conversation for the fantasy world. But if you guys have any ideas, let us know. We're here to cater to helping you guys out. But until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I am @BDentric. This is Benched with Bubba, episode 708. Catch you all next time.